Hello and welcome to our Monday show here at Catholic Answers Live on this Thanksgiving week as we prepare for the first Sunday of Advent coming up on this Thanksgiving weekend as well. And I know we're going to have a great Thanksgiving Day show for you, and I know we're going to have a great show for the day after Thanksgiving, and I know with not just a hopeful certainty, but a metaphysical certainty, because we recorded them. We finished recording them today. So you can look forward to two very good shows featuring Jimmy Akin and Tim Staples and our own President Chris Check on Thanksgiving Day and the day after Thanksgiving. Today, Monday, you know, usually, I don't know, I don't want to say it's the weakest day that Darren schedules, but not today. We've got a great day for you today. This is going to be a great Monday program. Second hour, we're going to do pro-life open forum, where you can ask any question that you'd like about life in all of its stages with Dr. George Delgado, the great Dr. George Delgado. And this hour, we're going to talk about sins of speech. And I had to go, in order to prepare for the show, I had to go through the list, and I have to confess being guilty of a good many of them. Our guest is Monsignor Charles Pope, who's co-host of the Morning Glory program weekday mornings on EWTN, the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. He's the author of two books that I know of, Catholic and Curious, and then one on the Ten Commandments, which is called The Ten Commandments. Monsignor Charles Pope is the pastor of Holy Comforter St. Cyprian Parish, a parish in Washington, D.C., though he is himself a native of Chicago. Monsignor Pope, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, good to be here. I guess you invited me because you thought I was an expert on sins of speech.
Well, I hear you committing them each morning on EW. No, that's not. Sins of speech. So we there's actually way more than I thought. I thought when this topic was proposed to me, I thought, well, I know that gossiping and calumny are sins of speech. I didn't realize in the article, your article, Bite Your Tongue, A Reflection on Common Sins of Speech, you list 10 of them. There's a lot of things we can do wrong in the way we speak.
That's right. This listed that on my blog, it even expands on St. Thomas's list in the Summa. But it's amazing how we can use such a beautiful gift of speech and twist it in so many different ways. I mean, you know, I guess I don't know, should I just list them? We can talk about a few of them?
I want people to know you can call and ask about whether it's your own struggles with sins of speech. Maybe you have been the victim of sins of speech. You just want to talk about this topic. 888-318-7884 is our number. 888-318-7884. And anyone's welcome to call with any question you've got about sins of speech. So yeah, start us off with what, first of all, generally, what are we talking about with sins of speech? And then what are some specific instances?
Yeah, you know, God gave us the gift of speech, you know, to speak the truth to one another, to build each other up and so on. And sins of speech, of course, then by way of defect, either do not fully conform to the truth or in some way disedify or even revile and cause great harm. You know, we can praise somebody, but we can also destroy reputations by what we utter. And the sins of speech generally, again, would be a defect of speech wherein we, instead of speaking the truth in love and encouraging and building one another up, we tear down and we do not speak the truth, or at least not fully. So, yeah, and there's a whole list of them here, but yeah, maybe as I read of the listeners could say, surely not I, Lord. there's the lying tongue, there's the flattering tongue, the proud tongue, the overused tongue. Not that I never had that problem. The swift tongue, the backbiting tongue, the tail-bearing tongue, the cursing tongue, the piercing tongue, and the silent tongue. So there's just a few for you.
Well, let me ask you this about this one then, just to start with, is the tail-bearing tongue is not necessarily a person who's sharing untruths. And this is an important thing that, as a matter of fact, throughout, like the swift tongue or the overused tongue, we can often speak in a way that is technically true, but is nonetheless sinful.
Yeah, Thomas in the Summa speaks of tail-bearing as wanting to sort of let loose division in a group. So you say something provocative that gets people arguing. that could be tale bearing. Whereas, you know, a lot of times we think you're bearing a false tale, you're spreading a lie. But the tale bearing, at least according to Thomas, is that, for example, he actually quotes the book of Sirach. And he says, a sinful man will trouble his friends and bring in debate in the midst of them that were at peace. So, yeah, you're just bringing news that you think is going to be provocative and get people fighting or in some way unsettled. And in a more colloquial way, I think, you know, the tale-bearing tongue is spreading unnecessary, often hurtful information about others. They spread personal information that should not be shared. And so again, one of the proverbs says, "He that goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, keep no company with one who opens his lips." And any rate, but so there's these two traditions about talebearing: one that is revealing things that should remain, you know, discreet or secret. Or the other, simply that a talebearer is someone who just brings in provocative information in order to kind of divide up a group or get them arguing.
888-318-7884, our number, 888-318-7884. You know, what has facilitated this is that we all have the ability to post our words for the entire world to read them now. So I have to say, Father, I've been very disappointed in the last year with some of our Catholic brothers and sisters who attack leaders of the church. And I'm not talking about telling the truth about some, well, clearly we've had some very bad leadership in various areas, but I'm talking about, you know, I don't like that this person phrased it this way rather than this way, you know, but the person may be a great evangelist. And so they will just attack, mercilessly, really without mercy, as if the person has no place in our Christian community or as a Christian leader because they don't use my terminology.
Yeah, you know, it's there's a Colin Donovan is famous for the phrase, I think, people dogmatize their preferences.
Ah, yes, wonderful, yeah.
And sometimes things are just preferences, or I would have expressed it a little differently. But of course, the nature of conversation should be that we can help each other to flesh things out. I mean, you know, even Jesus couldn't say the whole gospel in one sentence. I mean, there's going to just be nuances, things that are added later. I think sometimes we no longer give the benefit of the doubt to people.
We don't, right.
I find that especially, you know, true, as you say, in the Catholic world, because I'm most in touch with it, but how people who once were considered good, solid people by most Catholics are now, by smaller and smaller groups of Catholics, considered, you know, they're just completely excoriated and hated because of their position on one particular matter. Sometimes I think we used to be able to say, well, I don't really agree with so-and-so on this way he handles this, but he's generally a very good fellow, or she's really a very good teacher.
Right. I think that's the case, is that and if you accidentally praise someone, you know, say, I really appreciate this person's work or something, then you can expect, say you did it on Twitter, because I post something on Twitter. I'm pretty regular. At least once every 2 weeks I post something on Twitter. And and then you'll get this avalanche of, you didn't realize that there was a whole faction of people that hate this person because in an interview in 2007, they said this word instead of that word. They practically formed committees of hatred of this person. And you had no idea that that people couldn't just handle, this is a very good priest who does a lot of, you know, good work or something like that. They can't handle it.
Yeah, we used to call that being peevish. Yeah, you know, these lots and lots of pet peeves. I don't like that, you know. So yeah,
right.
Yeah, as I say, isn't it sad that we? And of course, it really on the internet, it's not exactly conversation. It's two monologues going on. Somebody writes this, and then somebody writes that,
right.
Rather than
That's
real
right.
conversation. But yeah,
that's right. If only everyone was as good as you and me.
Right.
This would all resolve itself. Our number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We're talking about sins of speech with Monsignor Charles Pope, and these are sins that, you know, everybody could talk about certain kinds of sins that we're, you know, maybe only a few people are implicated in this or that type of sin. But in sins of speech, it's hard to go through life as a human being and not either habitually have at least one of these that you have a problem with, or at least you fall into these. Somehow. We really all are implicated. I have not met anyone who I thought that person is just perfect in their speech.
Yeah, the book of James says that, right? You know, we all stumble in many ways, but anyone who's never at fault in what he says is able to keep his whole body in check.
Yeah, that's pretty good. If you right. So the one that I saw, the flattering tongue, and I never thought of flattery as sin, but flattery is sin? Is sinful?
Well, it can be, yeah. Particularly when it's, well, you know, it's exaggerating the good qualities of other people in order to ingratiate ourselves to them. It's a form of lying. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, we sometimes say polite, we embellish or we're more happy about something than we are. But generally, the idea of flattery is that you're trying to ingratiate yourself to someone, usually for some purpose of your own. So we'll flatter the wealthy or the possible benefactor.
Right.
We don't spend much time, quote, flattering those who can't benefit us. And so the idea is what makes it sinful is you're doing it to merely to ingratiate. And it's a form of lying.
Like Eddie Haskell with Mrs. Cleaver.
I've forgotten that, yes. You've got to be certain at our age to know stuff like that.
Yeah, none of the people in the booth, they're all too young. They don't know who I'm referring to. Oh, Darren knows. Darren knows who Eddie Haskell was. All right, well, take a moment. You can meditate on your own sins of speech, and if you have questions about that. We haven't talked about gossip, but I do want to talk about gossip. It's actually one of our favorite cultural pastimes nowadays. I mean, we have whole parts of the newspaper that are devoted to gossip. We have magazines devoted to it. We have TV shows devoted to it. And yet, it makes its way onto the list of sins of speech. We'll talk about that and all the other sins of speech with Monsignor Charles Pope when we come back.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
EWTN is now on Twitter. Get short, timely messages from EWTN on your computer or cell phone. It's easy to stay up to date on a wide variety of topics. Pro-life news, Vatican announcements, catechesis, apologetics, the latest EWTN programming, and more. You can link to EWTN on Twitter from our homepage or go to twitter.com/EWTN. At work, at home, at school, and on the road, stay connected to your world with EWTN's Twitter page.
Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking lies. That's from Psalm 34. I know that because I have read the blog post from Monsignor Charles Pope called Bite Your Tongue, A Reflection on the Common Sins of Speech. Monsignor Charles Pope is our guest, and you are welcome to call with your questions, 888-318-7884. Something Darren, our producer, said to me is women often get the reputation of being gossips. And I don't know why. Well, I'm not sure why that's associated with women. But he was talking about how we men, when it comes to talking about athletes, about sports, we're as nasty as can be in the way we talk about them. Like we just like, oh, he's, you know, a slacker. And I'm a Celtics fan, and I can't even list the nasty things I've said about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and his inability to play defense or his unwillingness to play defense. And you don't think of it, or because I'm doing it, or because the athlete is a certain sense anonymous to me or something, that it's a sin, but that it really is sinful to get in the habit of speaking about people that way.
Yeah, it is. You know, the word gossip originally, it's fascinating etymology. It kind of comes from the word for godfather or godmother.
Oh.
Someone that we're very close to, and therefore we can engage in idle talk. And so it came to mean those close friends with whom we can engage in what we would call idle talk, talk you're just passing the time with. But the problem, of course, is that when we're really close friends, we tend to engage in behavior where we talk about, we say what we really think.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. But that's part of why it can be hard to stop gossip, for example, because in a certain way, the person who is gossiping with you is making a proffer to you, is inviting you into a kind of intimacy. Yeah. And you don't want to refuse the intimacy, but you do want to say, I don't want to gossip about this person. So how do you, I mean, do you just have to be brutally honest? Like, let's talk about something else, or what do you have to do?
Well, you know, when I catch myself gossiping, almost never, of course.
No, certainly.
But when I do, I often start to think of how can I say some words of praise about this person, or qualify maybe, or contextualize some of their struggle, you know. So when I do catch myself, I try to rather, the, you know, kind of backtrack a little and say, well, you know, or maybe do some humility stuff. Well, of course, I don't have that problem at all, you know, whatever we're talking about.
Oh, I see. Yes.
You know, my humor to back out of it. But sometimes, you know, you're into it for about a half hour before you notice.
Oh, I know. So. I know. It is one of those strange things where you can just sit there bad-mouthing people or sharing stories of someone that person wouldn't want shared, frankly. Like, yeah. If you objectively, if someone said, would that person want you sharing that story right now? You would obviously go, no. But you're doing it before you realize, long before you realize you're doing it sometimes.
Right. You know, a couple of things, too, I think about gossip is it's kind of sad, but it's a sad, it's sort of a pathetic way that somehow we strangely feel better about ourselves if we can find someone who's more pathetic than we are, or at least in some somehow it makes us.
I do
feel
find
better.
That a relief. You're right. There is a certain psychological relief in finding someone who's a bigger loser. If you can, even if you can just present them as a bigger loser than yourself. The other thing, Father, I don't see it on the list here, but and maybe it's a particularly modern one, but it seems to me that we've got this nasty habit now of just labeling people and using a label as their identifier. You know, like you hear people who disagree with President Trump, he's a fascist. You hear people who disagree with I don't know what he is now, but Biden. I don't know if you're supposed to say president-elect, or I don't know if you're allowed what you're allowed to say yet, but he's a socialist or something. That even if these words, they might have some truth content for some people, for the most part, we're mostly using them just to like say, here's the category, let's put that person in. Now we don't have to treat them as a person.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we'll call that the simplistic tongue, or the reductionistic tongue, where we just reduce a person to a label and then just dismiss them. So that's common too. Yeah, it's obvious to all of us who've been living for the last 10 to 20 years that real hostility has become just kind of the norm. We're a very hostile country right now, very divided. And the way that we speak about each other, and I have to sometimes warn people in the pulpit, I say, you know, the way I hear some people talk about, for example, politicians, with whom I may have vigorous disagreements in terms of their policies.
Sure.
But the type of stuff that comes out of mouth should not come out of any Catholic mouth. No, we have no right to speak of people that way.
That's the thing, right? And then people will say, well, you know, you have to fight this, and you have to, well, but we're not fighting a battle that's dehumanizing for other people. If we're fighting that battle, then we've already lost.
Yeah.
We got some callers for you with some great questions. Let's go to Thomas in San Antonio, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Thomas, thanks for your call. Go ahead with your question.
All right. Thank you for taking my call. Real quick, this is about what you were just talking about with labels and stuff. I'll just throw it out there. You guys can talk about it later maybe, but people first or person first language and labeling, like saying a person who is homeless rather than a homeless person. Anyway, that flips the script there. My question is not about that, though. My question is about, I guess, typical greetings. You know, in America, we're used to saying, hey, how's it going? And then just responding, no matter, even if it's the worst day of your life, like, oh, I'm doing fine. I'm okay. Everything's good. You know, how's it going? Oh, it's good. How, and you? And, you know, certainly you can't tell everybody always what's on your heart all the time. But could that ever go into kind of a degree of this sin of speech, or like a lie, or a half-truth? You know, what would your thoughts be on that?
Well, you know, I think that at some level, the context of conversation like that is there's almost a social contract going on where we both know that those are not to be understood as univocal. You know what I mean by literal, you know, definitions of the words, like, so how are you doing is a way of saying hello. And then I'm doing fine is a way of saying hi back. And so you're using it in a very equivocal sense. So I don't know that I put it in the form of a lie, since I think both parties know what's going on there. It's a form of, we used to have a saying when I was a kid, it's just an expression. You know, that sometimes you don't take something literally, but it's just a sort of an expression. Now that said, I want to say that I think we Christians miss evangelical moments when someone asks how you doing, because you could say this: I am more blessed than I deserve, or I'm blessed for a sinner, or I'm feeling blessed and highly favored, or whatever it might be. Because in a way, it's an evangelical moment then, where you can sort of signal to that person, I got God in my mind, and whatever's happening to me, God's taking care of me. So anyway, it's just a different way of handling it altogether. Also, it signals the person that you're open to speaking about religious things. Yeah. You know, sometimes that's a freeing thing. Anyway, it's just a suggestion to avoid that kind of, it's a kind of a, you know, I'm, how you doing? I'm fine. You know, it's just hi back. That's kind of really all it means.
What do you think, Thomas?
Yeah, that's, thank you. Thank you for that thought. I mean,
that's
an example of that happened today, and that's why I'm calling. You know, I got back from Mass over lunch, and then my boss said, "Hey, how's it going?" And I just, "Oh, it's fine." But I just came from Mass, so I like your thought there.
Yeah, like even to say that, I just came from Mass, and I'm actually feeling wonderful. Thank you. That would be a real Yeah, that's a great point. Thank you, Thomas. I think that the silent tongue here comes in. That's the last of the sins. And this is a hard one because as a Christian, you know, I am called to do what you just did, which is try to open conversations so that people can, well, at least know that it's okay to talk about God with me and maybe take the opportunity to talk about God with me. It's like stopping gossip. In theory, I'm great at it, but in an actual social situation, it's very hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's right. And, you know, just to maybe flesh it out a little bit, the silent tongue is not speaking up when we ought to warn people of sin or to call them to the kingdom or to announce the truth of Jesus. In our age, the triumph of evil and bad behavior has been assisted by our silence as a Christian people, because we're supposed to, as prophets, speak God's word. Now, this starts in pulpits, so you better start praying for priests, because there's too many silent pulpits out there when they ought to be, you know. But it's not just pulpits, it's dining room tables.
Yes.
Where parents should be really speaking and teaching to their children. That is not the mind of God. Here's what God teaches. Where there should be, you know, more of this going on in catechetical settings and so on. We have not spoken the truth to others in a loving but a clear way.
And
it's led to a great deal of evil triumphs when the good remains silent.
Thomas, thanks again for the call. Our number is 888-318-7884. We're talking about sins of speech today with Monsignor Charles Pope. A very timeless and timely topic. Timeless in the sense that you can go back to the most ancient people and they will, any kind of wisdom literature anywhere in the world will talk about gaining control over your tongue. But timely in the sense that we live in an age of really nasty, awful speech habits in many ways, and they need the purification of the gospel, and that's what Monsignor Charles Pope is here to help us with. 888-318-7884, the number. Let's go to Ori in Oklahoma City, which is in Oklahoma, where they have Oklahoma Catholic Radio. Ori, go ahead with your question for Monsignor Pope.
Hi, thanks for having me on the radio. I just have a quick question. When I describe something, I didn't notice this until I got married, but my wife calls them spontaneous exaggerations. I will describe something that I am mildly disliked, and I'll be like, oh, that's the worst. Oh, McDonald's is so gross. When I'm like, oh, you know, I like their chicken nugget, you know, or like, insert this, you know, whatever. Is that something I should be worried about? Am I hurting my relationship with others, especially when it regards to the insert person, you know, even though, like, I really don't, I mean, talk about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, like, whatever, like, that kind of thing.
Okay, you know? So you're basically charitable in your speech, but you're a spontaneous exaggerator. I really like that. I gotta let you wait a minute while Monsignor Charles Pope composes his answer and we take a brief break. We're talking about sins of speech with Monsignor Charles Pope. You're welcome to call with your questions, 888-318-7884. I'm amazed we have not yet had the spouse call to say the husband or wife talks too much.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly. Touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world, Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Ori in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, listening on Oklahoma Catholic Radio, is online. We're talking about sins of speech with Monsignor Charles Pope, and Ori was asking before we went to the break, and we weren't able to get to an answer before we had to go to the break, about exaggerating, just the habit of exaggerating. Ori is the greatest and most important caller we've ever had, Monsignor Pope, so what have you got for him?
Yeah, but Ori, of all the callers I've ever talked to, you're the one I'm talking to now. in one sense, there's a certain glory in the human capacity to sort of exaggerate, to use hyperbole, to use the $10 term. it's a way of being colorful and keeping the talk interesting. Jesus used a lot of hyperbole, you know, when he, if your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out.
Yeah.
He doesn't mean that literally, excuse me, but he says that I want you to take this sin seriously, but if your hands are a problem, cut it off. Or he says, don't swear at all, you know, that kind of stuff. There's a certain, you know, hyperbole that's very common among the Jewish people. So, you know, if you ask a Jewish person, even to this day, who's very ethnically German, how are you doing? They'll say, oh, Donas, terrible, which means, you know, I'm okay. How are you? You know? Or St. Paul would said, I die daily. Really, Paul? Did that pass?
Yeah, know? Really? You don't have any good days, Paul?
I die daily. But there's a we want to check that a little bit in that, you know, sometimes our hyperbole can have a biting quality if we're not careful. But I think if people mostly know that we're sort of exaggerating, it's okay. But there's one of the proverbs I'll just read you, that some people make cutting remarks, but the words of the wise bring healing. And so some of our hyperbole could be cutting or harmful. So at some level, people kind of know when we're being a little jocose, you know, just kind of we're sort of being we're laughing a bit and exaggerating. I think it's okay, but it's something to be avoided in extremes.
Okay, Ori?
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it more than anything that you called.
Yeah. I love colorful speech. Here's a quick example. Say, yeah. I'm so busy, I met myself coming back.
Yeah, now see, that's a good entertaining turn of speech. However, your two hometowns, Chicago and Washington, D.C., are known for, political forms of speech that may not always be completely on the up and up. And this is one of the things that we're into today, too. But I have to say, as we become more politically divided, and I'm reading through your quotes from scripture that you give in your blog post, and the blog post is called Bite Your Tongue, A Reflection on Common Sins of Speech. And there's all these ones from Proverbs. One of the things that is repeatedly spoken against in the Proverbs and the Psalms and other places is the idea of mocking others or being in the company of those who mock others. Like, the scripture's really clear. Get away from people who mock others. And I feel like, especially via the television, we spend a lot of time with people who mock others. Like, there are people who are presented as late night TV hosts as if they're, you know, sainted people or something. And what they do night after night is really mean. It's genuinely mean spirited, and it's mocking. It's mocking of other people. And we'd be better off if we stayed away from it, I think.
Yeah. You know, St. Paul says, I ask that prayers be offered for all men, especially those in authority, so that we may live a peaceful and a godly life. And people say, yeah, but he didn't have a president like we do. Or, yeah, actually he did. The guy's name was Nero.
Yeah, right. Right. almost as bad as modern American presidents, but not not quite. But,
somewhere we crossed the line a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago or so. Yeah. Certainly with President Trump, I think we certainly crossed the line where people were no longer just sort of poking fun at some of their foibles or their tendencies or mannerisms in a fun, just a kind of a fun way. But they really became just this very hurtful and really hostile. And they felt every right to do it. Yeah.
If you think of a person like a Johnny Carson in the 1970s, this man is no saint. I mean, I'm not giving tips to you, but he did not spend his time mocking people. It wasn't mockery. It was just fun. It was just, you know, silliness and fun and good conversation. And that just doesn't seem to be good enough for people anymore. If you just have a good, pleasant, enjoyable conversation, well, somehow you're not fighting the good fight. You have to be mocking people.
Yeah, that's the expectation. Yeah, too much talk news out there.
Charles in Vermont, watching the Catholic listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Thank you so much for joining us, Charles. And it's Charlene in Vermont. Charlene, I don't know what's wrong with my brain today. Thank you for downloading the app, Charlene, onto your phone. Go ahead with your question for Monsignor Charles Pope.
Okay, so my question has to do with not keeping silent and to, you know, speaking the truth or, you know, evangelizing. I have adult children who are away from the faith. I have coworkers who aren't pro-life. And, you know, if the topic comes up at the right time, you know, either with my adult children or coworkers, I'm not afraid to, you know, to speak the truth or to say something, but at what point do you stop? I mean, if they start getting angry or say they don't want to hear it or, you know, I mean, am I supposed to keep it up or am I supposed to back down when, you know, when my thoughts are met with opposition?
Yeah. Okay.
So I think you stumbled on something that makes a lot of us, you know, kind of leery of speaking of controversial issues. But I would say that there's, Thomas and others have noted, that prudence is the charioteer of all the virtues. Now, prudence doesn't just mean caution. It means what's the best way forward to the goal, given the circumstances and the situation I'm in right now. So you might find sometimes you do need to press a point. Other times you'll back off. But I have also found that it's helpful. There's an old teaching that used to do, use more I statements than you statements. You know, I'm passionate about this because I earnestly believe with all my heart that's a child, and I just cannot endure the fact that they're being killed. I just can't, you know. And so instead of saying, you know, you need to do this or this is that, you know, at times you can just make it a very personal testimony and explain to them, you know, how it troubles you so greatly. You know, I often have to temper remarks when I'm about to say something in the pulpit that I know will be controversial, which shouldn't be controversial, but like I remember recently I was having to debunk transgenderism in the pulpit, and I said, listen, my good people, I love you too much to lie to you. I just can't do it. There are not 50 genders. There's just male and female. The Bible says God made us male and female. I had four people get up and walk out on me, you know? But I have to say that I tried to keep it carefully, but I just cannot, as your pastor, lie to you. I have to tell you what God has said, and I cannot but speak this to you, you see. So, and I think at some level of, for example, another real quick one, a lot of people ask me questions, well, how do I decline going to a gay wedding of my niece or nephew or whatever? And I always say, look, for sincerely held religious beliefs, I can't attend. You know, attendance indicates I'm celebrating, and I really can't celebrate this. I really earnestly believe that God has taught us things about sexuality and marriage. And so I beg that you'll give me leave. And I do have this for very sincerely held religious beliefs. I'm more than happy to talk with you about it in the future.
Charlene, now, does that help you with your problem?
Well, it does, but if I could just quickly add one other thing. So, like, when my adult children, one of my adult children has said that I preach to them, and I really mm-hmm. don't think I do. If an opportunity comes up, I try to keep it, you know, quick but truthful. So, should I just? I guess I'm just wondering. Am I just better off preaching how I live? Or, I mean, and I'm not very articulate, and I've been told that I use my outside voice when I get, you know, excited about something.
I never do.
It probably sounds like I'm yelling at them, which I don't mean to do, and I don't even, you know, until somebody brings it to my attention, I don't even realize it. But so do you think, you know, for those particular people, do you think it's just better maybe not to say anything?
No, I think it, especially if they're your children, you have a high obligation to correct your children in a way that you don't, strangers, you know.
Okay.
Now, I would say that, you know, I can't, you know, come up with a perfect mathematical formula for you. But, you know, I often wonder if any child has ever heard from their parent, dear, I really love you, and I just don't want you to go to hell. You know, so let's say their kids are shacking up or, you know, holding views that are quite contrary to the scriptures. I'm concerned for you. I love you. I'm your mother. And I want you to go to heaven. I don't want you to go to hell. And we have to, I think, begin to go back to this idea. We care about their souls. And what a person believes is very important. You know, we trivialize human beings by saying, oh, it doesn't matter what they think or believe. It's just so long as they don't beat their wife and they pay their taxes. Well, you know, That's a sad reduction. We were made to know the truth, and only the truth can set us free. But again, it's got to come from a heart of love. And the more you can demonstrate that you really love them and you care about where they're going to spend eternity, you know, they may get mad, but they'll think.
Charlene, thank you. We have to take a quick break. We're talking about sins of speech with Monsignor Charles Pope. If you have questions about sins of speech, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I have to say, Father, I think one of the things about sins of speech is they tend, a lot of our speech patterns are habitual. And so they're not necessarily sins that you just instantly overcome. They need some works to do it. So I want to ask you when we come back about overcoming bad habits in speech, you know, changing patterns so that we're not doing that, because it may be that the person intends not to be a gossip or not to be a, you know, harsh in the way they talk, but intending is not the same as accomplishing when things are habitual. We'll do that when we come back.
Call us now with your question.
Hello?
On Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
He is honored by the church as a saint with the title of the Seraphic Doctor.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
One of the greatest theologians and Franciscan mystics in church history, Bonaventure also wrote a biography of St. Francis that was commissioned by the Franciscans themselves. It took a saint and true mystic to understand a true saint and mystic. He died in 1274.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Next hour, Dr. George Delgado is going to be here, and we're going to do a pro-life open forum. So maybe you got a question about what is the proper way for human lives to be treated in the earliest stages, in the latest stages, in stages of disability or disease or any kind of crisis in the midst of life. We'll be open to all of it. If you have a medical type question, a medical ethical type question, it's welcome with Dr. Delgado as we do a pro-life open forum second hour. Our number here is 888-318-7884. We are talking about sins of speech. This hour with Dr. Monsignor Charles Pope, 888-318-7884. So I may have the habit of flattery. I may have the habit of deception. I may have the habit of gossip or of talking too much, taking up other people's time with the amount of talking I do. But I can't break these. I need to break the habits. In other words, I can't just stop cold turkey. You got any thoughts on breaking those bad speech habits?
Yeah, I think I do. I know that years ago, as a younger man, I used a lot of profanity because I thought it made me sound grown up, but it actually just made me sound like a teenager.
Yeah,
but,
right.
I began to realize, especially when I would use the holy name like GD this or JC or... when I would catch myself, I would then make an act of reparation. As soon as I was aware I'd done it, I would say, JC, by which I mean Jesus is Lord. You know, I would actually say it out loud in the moment, and kind of people kind of get startled. Or GD, oh no, I mean God bless you.
Yeah.
But so, and I found that helped me to overcome it fairly quickly. It's fairly rare now that something like that will come out of my mouth. The other thing is, we sort of mentioned it earlier, that if I become aware that I'm gossiping, and as I become aware of it, I try to think to myself, well, what's something good I could say about this person that kind of add that back into the conversation and say, or something sympathetic about them. Well, he's probably struggling right now. Maybe we should pray for it. You know, and so I found that helps too. So that reparation, you know, that very word means to repair, something I have found kind of helpful. Some can also do like a particular examine where you're just going to really look at all the times you say this week, you know, oh my God, you know, or something like that, and try to focus a little bit more on not doing that, you know, but again, it's all, I would say, you want to make reparations as soon as you can.
All right. Yeah. It starts to create a new habit in you, a more positive habit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Diane in Florida, listening to EWTN on Channel 130 Sirius XM Satellite Radio. You are up next. Diane, go ahead with your question for Monsignor Charles Pope.
Hello, Monsignor. I am
so excited for this message, this topic you are speaking of tonight.
Well, you're very positive, Diane. Thank you for that.
Yes.
You could not be more on point. Do you have a few hours? I have all of these issues you're discussing. I don't speak appropriately. I speak too loud. I annoy people. I can't be quiet. I can't stand down.
Have you thought of going into radio, Diane? Because people with those afflictions tend to do really well in radio.
God bless you. But the point is, I truly believe that God instilled this in me. This is a virtue that God put in me, this passion. And I read the catechism about the passions, but I need to channel it. I need to make it appropriate. I can relate to Charlene so much. Both of my children are in deep trouble, in my opinion. Of course, they don't believe it. They're not going to listen to their mother. But one especially, and it's a very long story, but because of being unequally yoked in a bad marriage for a very long time, and now a divorce, my adult child is very damaged, and I can't reach him. But I will not be quiet. I will not stand down if it means my child's life. And is that wrong? Because everybody's pointing at me. She's crazy. Listen to her. There she goes again. Like that.
Okay. But well, I want to say that.
Go ahead, Monsignor. Hang on, Diane, just a quick second.
Yeah, part of the answer to that is, you know, and our strengths are our struggles. I would say that our struggles are about 4 or 5 degrees separated from our strengths. And it sounds like you have the gift of gab. That is to say, you're articulate and, you know, you say what's on your mind. And that can be a beautiful thing. But that's also your struggle. So the question is when to speak and when not to speak. And, you know, there's one of the thing here, the swift tongue, the tongue that speaks too quickly before we have all the information, or the rash tongue. So we want to avoid that. But on the other hand, if you have the gift to speak, and the courage to do it, that's also a beautiful thing. So just notice that your strength and your struggle are very closely related. For example, take a person who's got everything organized. They have everything under control, but they're also very controlling. You know, so our strengths and struggles are very closely related. So try to find that sweet spot, that 5 degrees of separation, and stay there. Now, one other quick thing to say about this, because we've got enough time running short. St. Catherine of Siena was famous for writing very lengthy letters and being fairly frank in her discussions or her letters as well. And she would often apologize. She says, "I apologize for the length and the tone of this letter, but I assure you I write to you from the abundance of my heart."
So she's making sure the person knows she cares about them, even though she's going to lay it on to them.
Yeah.
All right. Very, very good advice. Diane, I hope that's helpful to you. Our number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We're talking about sins of speech. I suppose there's a way, Father, that some of us sometimes need to be convinced that what we are doing involves a sin of speech. And I'm going to just tell you about a guy I know. It's not me. It's always, people always say it's you if you say it's a guy I know, but who just monopolizes people's time with talking. And I don't know. See, now you're already thinking it's me. And Monsignor, I'm telling you, it's but I don't know if this person knows it or doesn't know it. I don't know if it would be terribly hurtful for him if I said, "That's not very polite what you're doing." But there, and I imagine as a priest, you must encounter the person who can bend your ear for a very, very long time. Help me, Father. That's all I'm asking for. Help me out with this.
Where words are many, sin is not absent. But he who finds, who holds his tongue is wise. No, but I think you're right. There are some people who dominate the conversation. We all know that. And I think there's something psychological sometimes going on there. They can't stand a moment of silence. They feel they need to keep the conversation going. And maybe they're lonely. I don't know. But there are just times when, you have to just say, wait, stop. stop. And then, you know, I sometimes have spiritual directees and some who come to me and they go on and on and on. I have to finally say, stop. I've got too much information in my head. Let's deal with what we do know. And so there can be some of those showstoppers where you have to simply finally say to them, look, stop for a minute. I'm overwhelmed. Let me say a few things that I've heard you say or something like that. But there's something I'm convinced of loneliness when a person talks endlessly or anxiety, if it's loneliness or anxiety.
But I think it's also then a kind of self-fulfilling loneliness in the sense that people avoid that person. They avoid them because they go, oh, I just can't. I can't do the 1 hour conversation right now. I'm going to take a back alley.
You know? Yeah, right, right. There's also, you know, I have something beautiful I've noticed with couples who've been married 40 or 50 years. You go to a restaurant, which you can't do much of these days, but you look at a young couple and they're talking a lot real fast.
Yeah.
But you look at an older couple and they're just kind of sitting there saying nothing.
Yeah. It's just because we're so angry with each other. No, that's not true. I know what you're saying, though. That's right. You a different kind of communication develops over time.
I already know what the other one is thinking,
Catherine in Florida, you are next. Go ahead with your question for Monsignor Charles Pope. Hang on, Catherine. Okay, now go.
Yes.
Go ahead. Yep.
Thank
we got you
so much. I'll make it quick because I know time is short. The other evening, I was in a company of Catholics of different degrees and non-Catholics or non-practicing irreligious people, about a dozen. And the Catholics start talking about one of them was saying how they liked going to mass better online, that they get more out of it. And then things like, then it devolved into a discussion of where you can find a 15-minute mass. And I find these things scandalous, frankly, as a daily churchgoer. And I don't know how to respond when I see them, and I just kind of shrink.
Do you think, if I may, Catherine, just real quick, because we're getting towards the end, but you're talking about they're giving a bad witness. They're basically bad-mouthing the Catholic Church to other Catholics and to non-Catholics.
Yeah.
Father, help us with that. What would you do?
Well, you know, I think a simple response to that particular issue is to say, well, remember, though, I mean, as Catholics, our faith is very incarnational. You don't receive a sacrament on TV. You have to go and be there to receive Holy Communion. And also you don't have a good fellowship on TV. You have to just go there and mingle with God's people. So I just I have to say that's just not our understanding of the sacraments, and we need to long for the day that we can all be back in church together.
And what about the thing about being critical, though, of the church? You know, maybe I don't like this or that about the Catholic Church, and saying it in the presence of non-Catholics, but also kind of maybe in a way that's discouraging to other Catholics.
Yeah, well, you know, as I say, I think there's a middle line between, you know, you can be overly defensive of the church. We're so big and we're so old that just about everything is true. I mean, but it's not always fair or in context. So you want to have that in the back of your mind. But on the other hand, you can say, you know, I just want you to know, I love the church, warts and all. You know, the church is Christ's bride. And how many of you would like it if we went to Jesus and says, I like you, I love you, but I cannot stand your ugly bride. She's so ugly. Please get her out of here. You know, he wouldn't be happy about that. Somehow we love the bride of Christ. And I just want you to know, I really love the church. And I know I've struggled, but I love the church.
Okay, Catherine.
And again, the more you can turn it into testimony is my point, rather than argument.
I see what you're saying. I love that answer.
That actually, Monsignor, if I may, that seems to be a theme of your addressing the sins of the tongue, so to speak, is to turn it to my experience and to turn it back to God where you can.
Yeah, you know, I think when we were kids, the argument from authority carried a lot of weight, but these days it doesn't. But at the end of the day, people can say, I really believe this with all my heart. I really love you, and I'm concerned. People trust personal testimony a lot more today than they used to.
Okay. Monsignor Charles Pope, thank you so much. It's always great to have you on. Would you mind, or would you please give us your blessing before you go?
Yes. Pax benedictio Dei omnipotentis, Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti, descendat super vos et maniat semper.
Amen. Thank you so much, Monsignor. Have a very happy Thanksgiving.
You do the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up next, it's 1 hour of a pro-life open forum. Anybody can call, whether you're a pro-life person or not, if you want to talk with an expert on life issues and the ethics of treating various diseases and how we treat life in its earliest and latest stages and disability and the whole thing, bioethics. It's all on the table next hour with Dr. George Delgado.